Welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. The past couple of weeks certainly have been just unbelievable and I think unprecedented in a lot of different ways. First and foremost, our hearts go out to those directly affected by this and their loved ones. I also think that one of the things when I think about our mission at Charity Charge, it's to be a resource and help organizations, especially with things related to fundraising, cash flow, improving financial stability, reducing liability. And more as we've been out talking with our clients and also just looking nationwide at trends, what's happening in the nonprofit sector, I think we're realizing that a lot of individuals running organizations and staff members at these nonprofits are very concerned about what's happening. And so today I'm really proud to be able to bring on one of my friends and one of our clients at Charity Charge, John Eith, who's the CFO at ARC Human Services. A big reason why I wanted to bring John on is he has decades of experience operating nonprofits in the controller and chief financial officer position. He's done that for almost 25 years now. And in addition to that, he's also a certified public accountant, certified management accountant, and a certified financial manager. So from day one, when I got to know John this past summer, our first phone call, I could tell that he just had a ton of experience. And I really hope that this episode brings a lot of his just wisdom, advice, and perspective to those out there uncertain about what's happening. So John, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
You know, I'd like to first, you know, I do want to get into it and make this a very practical episode, but I know that I just, it's a quite prestigious bio that I rattled off there. Do you kind of mind in your own ways, like giving perspective to the audience of just how you got involved just in the starting off, you know, in your career in the finance positions and then some of your perspective of what you've just been doing over the past 25 years?
Sure. Actually, I started as a staff accountant right out of college and worked for a nonprofit and then went into for-profit accounting for many, many years. Worked as a senior accountant, financial analyst, and then moved into the role of controller. And I was in that position for several years until I got into a CFO role. And so I've had experience in both for-profit and nonprofit accounting, which really gives you a broad perspective of what's out there and the ability to be able to take best practices and apply them wherever you're working. One of the things that is extremely important, as everyone knows, especially now in the situation we're in, is monitoring cash flow. And that's something that from the beginning of my career through current day, that's still a very critical aspect of the whole accounting and financial function. So one of the things that I was able to get implemented early on was daily cash flow analysis, bank account analysis, to know where you're at every point in time as far as your cash reserve.
I'm really glad you brought that up. So let's also kind of just jump right into that. You know, I think that part of, as I'm, you know, the other week, I think I'd mentioned to you, I'd had Scott Jackson, who's the CEO and president at Global Impact, another nonprofit, and I really respect him. As I'm talking with him and other leaders and yourself now, I think that this is kind of exposing and bringing about a lot of just tried and true principles. So I'm just curious from your perspective, does anything really need to change for you, or do you, as you move into a time like this, or it sounds like you guys have already had these principles in place, like any perspective on just on the idea of what's tried and true versus what might need to change in a time like this? If you're, you know, maybe new to the nonprofit industry, maybe you've only had your organization up and running for a few years.
Sure. One of the things that has really benefited, because the infrastructure is still in place, so we still have utilities, we still have internet service and things like that, being able to leverage your technology to continue in business. That was something that I believe a lot of industries and a lot of nonprofits have been looking at. Thankfully, we were able to get a large grant about 2.5 years ago. And we had five separate strategic initiatives pertaining to technology advancement that we were able to get implemented. And it's paying significant dividends now because we're able to do many of the day-to-day kinds of things remotely in lieu of having to be in person. And I believe that as companies continue looking at their contingency plans and things like that, it's very critical to be able to keep your organization up and running and communicating just with your team in a very timely way. So that has paid significant dividends. The other piece to that is, you know, we still have to pay staff. We have to pay vendors. I'm going to talk a little later about some cash ways to conserve cash, and that will I'll elaborate on that a little more. But just being able to function on a day-to-day basis from a remote location can be a challenge. Thankfully, we have systems in place that we're able to leverage, that we're able to basically do business as usual.
And to be real practical there, what are some of those systems that you're using that you're finding valuable, especially now more than ever? Kind of in the sense of, if you're thinking of a nonprofit that hasn't set that up, might be looking for suggestions.
We actually have an electronic purchase order system that we can utilize throughout the organization. So we have our particular industry and our particular organization have group homes throughout Western Pennsylvania. And some of the homes are, you know, 100 miles from headquarters. And so folks are able to actually submit purchase order requests electronically, get them approved virtually immediately, and keep that process going. We also have an electronic expense reimbursement system, so we're able to get folks their expenses reimbursed actually two times a month, because we import that into our payroll system and are able to actually pay them as a reimbursement on their paychecks. We have had electronic direct pay for several years, but that's really paying dividends now, so you don't have to worry about getting physical checks into people's hands. We also have an online training program that we use for staff. So they're able to, during this time frame where they're practicing their social distancing and being indoors, able to utilize that for training time and get training accomplished that way through our web application. We also have an electronic onboarding system for new staff. We're still hiring staff through this process because we have to take care of folks 24/7. And so that system has worked really, really well from the standpoint of using texting technology, online applications, remote interviewing kinds of systems. So that has really paid dividends significantly. And we also have an online performance management system that we're utilizing. When it comes to the practical aspect of actually purchasing food and supplies and things, we've rolled out the credit card program across the company. So every location has a credit card that they can utilize to keep the supplies and food purchases going. So those particular components of our technology, we've been able to incorporate, and it's really working well over these last couple of weeks.
I'm really, first of all, happy to hear that. I want to break up part of what you just said there to define it a little bit, because give us a perspective. How large of revenue is your organization?
Sure. We're over $38 million a year in revenue.
So I think that the majority of organizations, from just if you size up the nonprofit industry, are certainly, you know, below $1 million in revenue, and then even higher percent below $500,000, and even a very large percent below $250,000 in revenue. And so I think that if you're listening to this and you're hearing John, you know, there are only so many organizations that are going to be of his revenue size. But I think that a lot of the things that John is talking about are best practices and ways to think about how to, you know, set up your organization for success. Some of them would apply, you know, and candidly, a lot of them, just the philosophy at any revenue size. You know, one of the things on a really practical level, John, I'd say, you know, that we see time and time again is organizations, again, that are in that, let's say, $1 million and less in revenue, they may be not using an advanced electronic purchase order system like you would have, But to make purchases, they've been doing it all on debit cards, and they've just been sharing one office debit card amongst, you know, the three or four employees. And so even making that shift to having corporate cards for the account means each employee can have one in their wallet. And I think it's ever more relevant in times like these, as smaller organizations are separated, but obviously still need to make critical purchases. So just trying to give a kind of a counter perspective for smaller groups to give them some perspective. But I think it's great that you're breaking down and people can see as they have goals to grow their organization, you know, what's just required on a very practical basis. With that being said, you know, I know we jumped into it, but John, one of the things that I found is that a lot of individuals that certainly start organizations are unbelievably passionate, unbelievably mission-oriented, and are all about the mission, and oftentimes a real expert in serving whatever that mission is for their organization, whether it's, you know, whatever it could be. But they often lack and have never taken a business course or an accounting course. So getting back to basics right now, for those people, could you just in your own way define what cash flow is and just give a practical perspective of why that's so important?
Sure. Well, cash flow, if you can use the trite saying cash is king, it is absolutely true. When it comes to running your organization, you have to be able to have enough liquid assets to pay your expenses, pay your staff, and still be able to perform your mission. So in order to do your mission, you have to have the funds in order to do it. And most nonprofits, I would venture to say their largest expenditure is staffing, the payroll, and the benefits piece. So in order to keep your staff engaged, you got to be able to have the cash flow to do that. In times like this, it's very critical that you monitor your cash and you look for ways possibly to stretch your cash out. I'm going to, if you don't mind, Stephen, just to go into a couple of practical things about cash flow.
Please do.
And ways you can streamline your processes. First thing, you know, because cash is a liquid asset, it's most susceptible to fraud. And so you want to make sure that your internal controls are in place. And I know that it's difficult for some nonprofits because of the size to segregate duties, but you never want to have one individual actually collecting cash or checks, depositing those checks, recording those checks, and then signing checks and doing the bank reconciliation. If possible, you want to separate as many of those activities as you can. And even if it's just pulling out the bank reconciliation for a different person, that really needs to happen because, unfortunately, many nonprofits experience embezzlement and fraud just by not having the internal controls in place. So even in this time that we're all wondering, you know, what the next day holds, the thing is not to panic, but also have systems in place that you can still control your cash. With that said, I know that cash inflows are probably slowing down for some nonprofits in that, depending on the service they're providing, their funders might not be providing those funds, or donations could be dropping off some. So practical ways you want to slow down your cash is I would recommend contacting vendors, or if you have lessors, if you have a lease or a rental, and just talk about extending terms for payment. That's a very quick, practical way that you can stretch your cash flow from the standpoint of, you know, focusing in on the critical items that need paid for. So the first thing I would do is contact your vendors for expenditures you've already made and talk about extending terms just due to the circumstances. And most vendors are understanding and reasonable and can work something out with you and even talk about maybe possibly waiving late fees and things like that. That's something that you want to, I would encourage people to pursue quickly just so they can keep the cash for critical components of their operation. The other piece to that is for discretionary expenditures you might have that you can hold off purchasing or expending or travel, anything like that. If you can defer those at this point, that's really what you want to do to conserve cash. So your goal here is conserving cash the best that you can. Depending on the situation of a nonprofit, it's nice to have, you know, 60 days of cash in the bank that you can then utilize. And the 60 days of cash, if you take all of your expenditures and you average what your daily expenditures are, that's where the 60 days would come in. So 60 days of cash to cover expenditures. If you're able to extend those days by talking with your vendors or deferring some of your expenses, that's all the better. If you are a smaller nonprofit, but you have a credit card, you can utilize the credit card, and depending on the timing of purchases with a credit card, you know, you can extend your credit even an additional 20 or 25 days that way. So there's practical things you can do to conserve your cash during these uncertain times.
Really appreciate that you went into all that and shared it. I think that, you know, there's a lot of takeaways that I'll have from this, but I love that this theme is on cash flow, making sure you have cash reserves, and some of the things you can do to shore that up. I want to shift gears for a little bit, because I know the other week when we were just chatting one-on-one, you were telling me a little bit about some of the things you're focused on doing. I don't want to say that you necessarily have idle time or downtime, but that you're focused on improving your skills. So I'm really curious to shift gears as we round out this interview, John. Can you talk about some of the different certifications and educational things that you've done in the past and you're doing now? Because this might be a great time for those either interested in getting the nonprofit space or those that are already involved in it to improve their skill set.
Yes, because we live in an ever-changing world, and especially with technology and regulations and things in a constant state of change, part of the professional competence that you want to maintain and enhance is continuing your education on pertinent items as it pertains to nonprofit industry, finance and accounting specifically. Because I am certified with several certifications, I have actually mandated requirements for continuing education. But I take those and actually utilize that to review and apply and enhance my skills in pertinent areas that are going to impact and favorably influence the organization I work for, you know, and for personal development. So because we live in a competitive world and because things are changing so quickly, it behooves us all to be lifetime learners. We want to keep our skill set active, honed, and ready to face the uncertainty. And the more tools we have in our tool belt, more opportunities we have to be able to strategically make the right decisions for our organization.
And I know you were talking about a couple of the ones. I think right now you're focused yourself on this certified fraud examiner education certification. Can you talk a little bit about that and the purpose of that?
Sure. There is an organization actually in Austin, Texas, it was started, that there is a certification. It's called Certification Fraud Examiners, and it's a four-part examination that goes through the different components of fraud and how to address it, how to recognize it, and how to mitigate or minimize it. In my career, I've actually had to deal with a few frauds, and due to the background I have, I thought that it would enhance my professional development and career to be able to have this specific certification that I can utilize, you know, and leverage with my other experience to help not only my organization, but maybe others that could be experiencing issues around fraud.
John, that is actually kind of juicy. So I know that there might be some sensitivity, but to the extent you can share it, Could you give some practical examples of fraud that you've discovered or seen perhaps firsthand?
Sure. I worked actually at one time for a for-profit organization that had convenience stores. And we, as part of our product available to the public, we sold money orders. In this particular location, on average, would sell about $300 a month in money orders. And one month, it skyrocketed to like $30,000. And so obviously it was a big red flag. We went out and we actually talked to the store manager, and this store manager was kind of deflecting our questioning and things like that. And I just had to wait until we got the actual canceled money orders back from the vendor. Unfortunately, what happened, the store manager was taking cash out of the cash register and replacing it with a money order that was written to the company. So basically she was, you know, stealing cash and replacing it with a money order that the company was paying for. We ended up in about 6 weeks, she had stolen $40,000. We filed criminal charges. We filed with our insurance company, but unfortunately when someone's doing that, they really don't have the capacity to repay. So that was a hard lesson to learn, but one that lets you know that if you've got internal controls in place, you know, like account reconciliations, you can catch a fraud hopefully quickly enough to mitigate some of the possible damages.
It's so interesting, and I love that you have this practical experience to share. As we round this out, you know, a question that's on top of my mind is, I know obviously your organization, you know, you shared from a revenue perspective is over $30 million. You've got a large employee base, well staffed up in a variety of different areas, especially in the finance functions and roles. And you talked a lot about the separation of duties, so to speak, to not make sure, you know, one person is handling all the money in, all the money out, and the reconciliation. So I'm curious, for your size of an organization, what role does the board play on the finance side? I mean, how do you interact with your board, and what are their responsibilities, or put a different way, perhaps your responsibilities to them as the CFO?
What we do as part of our board meeting process, we present the financial statements for the organization, some financial ratio and metrics. We want to keep them apprised of where we're at, making sure that the organization is financially healthy, our cash flow is good. We actually interact with them pertaining to capital purchases, vehicles, building purchases, things like that. So they are monitoring us from a more of a global perspective. You know, we handle the day-to-day things from a management team, but we present them the information to ensure that they're doing their governance role and their fiduciary responsibility for the health and well-being of the organization.
And how does that contrast in your ways when you think about smaller organizations?
Well, the one thing you got to be careful with as far as your board development for nonprofits, many times smaller nonprofits will pick board members based on the friendship of the CEO or family members and things like that, which is okay. But many times you want to look outside that scope and try to pull in people with expertise in certain areas, like getting a financial expert on your board is a very key piece. So they understand the financial piece, they understand the audits, they're able to give sound financial advice to the management team. It also is helpful to have, if you can get someone that has legal experience, an attorney would be helpful. Just general business experience is helpful too, because you want to be able to build a board that understands businesses and able to give sound counsel to the management team as far as the day-to-day operation goes.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I think it's so interesting chatting with you. Again, I mean, just when you look at the industry as a whole, there's only such a smaller percent that would be at a 10 million or 20, or even in your case, a 30 million plus in revenue organization. So I think it's really, really interesting for these smaller organizations to be able to learn from you and figure out best practices that they can put in their organization now and moving forward. So I want to thank you so much for your time today, for working with us at Charity Charge, for being a friend, for being a part of our community. And I really just, it means so much to me that you're doing this. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Stephen. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I know that today was very much about, you know, how you can serve, you know, and you helping us and helping all of our nonprofits. But I want to make sure that everyone makes sure they know that, you know, John is with ARC Human Services, which is archumanservices.org. John, any little bit you could share about just the organization as a whole, and if there's any other ways that people maybe could get involved, or if they're inclined, they want to support your work?
Sure. ARC Human Services is a provider of intellectual services to folks with intellectual disabilities and mental health. And we have 81 community homes around Western Pennsylvania. And also we do day habilitation and in-home services. ARC Human Services is part of the National ARC. If you've heard of the National ARC, I'm sure most people have. We actually have chapters in every county in Pennsylvania, and ours is actually in Washington County. We always look for opportunities for people if they want to contribute or if they would like to volunteer. We're always looking for folks that are passionate about taking care of folks that need our help. And that's the wonderful thing about our mission. You know, our goal is to make other people's lives better. And so day to day, it's a wonderful thing to do to be able to impact someone's life in a positive way.
You and I are on the same page there. And that's what I love about this, just always being mission oriented and mission aligned. So, John, thanks again for being on here. To everyone that's just listening in, if you have suggestions or feedback or want to recommend guests for the podcast, please just reach out to us. You can email me, Stephen@charitycharge.com. I wish everyone good health. Take care.